Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to a new stretch of must-have seen TV episodes. Before we get started this time, I just want to take care of some business first, let you know what's going on with the podcast. First of all, Pride Month is coming up. June is going to be a special Pride Month for Must Have Seen TV, talking about gay episodes of sitcoms of the 20th century, from the 70s, 80s, 90s, etc., where a gay comes into an episode for a week, the entire cast freaks out, and then they leave, never to be seen again. I love these episodes, as problematic as they may be, or as progressive as they may be, surprisingly. We're going to learn a lot, we're going to talk about a lot, and it's going to be a gay old time. I should probably do the Flintstones on the podcast at some point. Next, I also want to just take a little second to pay audio tribute to the people that we've lost since I last did an episode, which include the great Georgia Engel of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Doris Day of the Doris Day Show, Tim Conway of Carol Burnett. It has been a rough spring and early summer, but if you want to see and watch any of their work, I highly suggest you stream the Mary Tyler Moore Show, from season, I think, four on, when Georgia Engel joined the cast as the brilliant Georgette Baxter. That's on Hulu, and if you have Amazon Prime Video, you can stream the Doris Day Show and a whole bunch of Carol Burnett Show, so please go check that out. Also, for Tim Conway, I highly, highly suggest watching the Paul Lynde Halloween special, even if it isn't Halloween, because it is brilliant and he is in it as a big burly truck driver. We actually also talk about Tim Conway peripherally in this week's episode, because he is part of an episode of Match Game where Jim Nabors from the Andy Griffith Show and Tim Conway, Vicki Lawrence, and Carol Burnett all crash the Match Game set, and it is great, and you can find that on YouTube. I also want to just take a moment to thank people that have left reviews in iTunes for the show. Gotten two so far this year, so I just want to thank Norn Cutson, who writes, "I'm not someone who watches a lot of TV, but the TV that I watch I am devoted to! I love to talk about it, I love to think about it, and I appreciate others who do. I've been binging this podcast, and it's been so enjoyable. Thank you, Norn Cutson." A very, very Asgardian-sounding name. I will take this as an endorsement from the halls of Valhalla. And then Stats1203 writes, "This is a fun, charismatic podcast where knowledgeable people who love 20th century sitcoms chop it up and keep everyone engaged. Love all the cool unknown facts and trivia that Brett and his guests present, in addition to the subtle things about each episode that they notice. Love it from a writer's and viewer's perspective. As a request, can I ask for Who's the Boss Season 1 Episode 17 entitled Eye on Angela to be reviewed? It is available to stream on Crackle. Thanks for all the great content." Yeah, I'll definitely do that, for sure. That will be a summer thing. I'll try to get to that in July, because I am now working on, again, Pride Month in June. So, without further ado, let's get into this week's talk about The Andy Griffith Show and a couple of fun girls. Judy, it's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century. From I Love Lucy to News Radio, I'm your TV guy, Brett White, and I'm also a reporter, producer for TheSider.com. This week I am joined by, from the Hard Times podcast, and a writer for With Spandex at Uproxx.com, Al Collins.
Judy, I can't do it.
Is that a thing?
So impersonating Cary Grant by repeating the name Judy was a thing.
Okay.
But he never, it's one of those like mythical things. He never does that in a movie.
What movie is that supposedly from?
There's some movie that he was in with a Judy, but he never did that thing.
Oh, well, I mean, like learning all sorts of things on this week. Yeah, so welcome to the podcast. Well, those two things that I introduced you with are wrestling endeavors.
Yes.
Yes, professional wrestling endeavors. But you're also big into comic books,
mm-hmm.
which is my other love.
Yes. We both sort of came from the same world of comic book blogging of a few years ago that is no longer exactly functional like it once was.
No, and it was barely functional then.
True.
I count myself so, like, hashtag blessed that I'm not in that right now.
Oh, same.
Jesus,
totally same.
Like, the amount of, like, dust-ups that get kicked up nowadays, I'm like, I'm so glad I'm in TV writing, which is somehow less hectic. How is the world of, like, wrestling journalism?
It can be fractious, but it's mostly fun. I like it. I generally like it better than comics, which is less to do with... It's not that I like wrestling more than I like comic books. It's just that the community is, as the kids would say... Actually, no, I was going to say the community is less toxic, but there's still plenty of toxicity in wrestling, but it's less widespread.
They haven't figured out how to find each other yet, or like amplify each other's voices.
Well, I think it's that in wrestling, we still have the sort of conservative elements who are toxic because they hate everyone who's not like them.
Yeah.
That exists in comics, too. But in wrestling, the opposite ideology has yet to go sour.
Okay.
Where you don't have the kids who will police every little thing you say for proving you problematic.
If you did something wrong 10 years ago, you should be crucified.
Right,
nowadays,
exactly. Yeah.
Et cetera.
See, if people in wrestling fandom did that, there would be no wrestlers that it was okay to like. So you just have to let it go.
No, you cut. But this week, we're going to be traveling to April 13th, 1964. Another movie, The Carpetbaggers. Rolled the box office. Can't Buy Me Love by the Beatles topped the charts, and I think this might be the first Beatles song I've referenced on this podcast.
Interesting.
I don't know. I guess I'm just not doing many songs, many episodes from, like, 1964, like their big reign, so that's wild. And CBS aired the Andy Griffith Show episode Fun Girls L. You must have seen Fun Girls before today. Yeah.
Yes. I have specific memories of watching Fun Girls in, like, 5 p.m. reruns with my dad when I was a kid and thinking it was really funny.
Yeah.
Not like I watch it now and I realize there are so many implications that I did not understand when I was a kid. But it remains really funny.
Well, so where did you grow up? You're in Tennessee now?
I grew up in Tennessee.
I grew up in Tennessee.
Yeah, I grew up actually, my dad was a state park manager, so I grew up like on the grounds of a state park right outside of Morristown, Tennessee.
Oh, wow. So we were talking about this beforehand of like how Andy Griffith is such a dad show. Because like, is that your history with Andy Griffith, like it being the dad show?
Basically, yeah. My dad would watch it almost every day. Like he would come home from work and usually like sit on the couch and drink a beer and watch the Andy Griffith Show before like dinner time. And I was usually around and a lot of times would watch it with him.
What other shows were there? Like, was the Andy Griffith Show like the show?
I mean, it was definitely the show that I watched with my dad. We would also probably watch Nick at Night, but that was like, you know, later and less like a time when we were always sitting around.
And Andy Griffith didn't hit Nick at Night until a little bit later, I don't think. Because I think Andy Griffith was so firmly entrenched in, like, the NBC affiliate was running that at 5 p.m. Like, such a major network. Like, Nick at Night had the shows that were, like, a half step past that. Like, they may have been out of rotation a little bit. So Andy Griffith was always, like, a major network rerun show. And my dad would just watch it all the time. And I guess maybe it's because he liked it. I was just always like, no! Like, I don't want to watch that. But it is so like idyllic South. Like,
yeah,
it's,
and it's very much like, you know, I'm from the very eastern edge of Tennessee, mm-hmm. which is almost North Carolina. So
yeah,
it's very much like Smoky Mountains, Appalachia.
Because this is set in North Carolina.
Yeah. And yeah, it's very much, I mean, the world of Mayberry never really existed, but like that's the mythical version of basically the world that I grew up in.
Did we edit that? Because so in the previous episode, you can go back and listen to the episode I did with Ethan Kay about Andy Griffith Show,
like 6 or so months ago. I don't know if he edited this out. We got into a very long tear about how like the version of Mayberry on this show never actually existed. But there's like, and then sometimes I'm like, I edit things out of the podcast when I'm like, this episode is so long and this is starting to get very into like the weeds. But that's very true of like how this version of Mayberry works, just like all white people. It's all white people, and, like, that never existed. And when people say we want to go back to, like, Mayberry, it's like, we want to go back to a thing that never existed. But because this show was so popular and so ingrained in all of our brains, we all, like, think that it did.
Yeah.
And it never did. Like, if you were, I don't know, like, if you were gonna, you could probably, like, go on Google and look up, like, North Carolina 1964. You'll see a lot of different kinds of
people. Oh, for sure. Definitely. On the other hand, like, I'm certainly not going to defend the racial politics of the Andy Griffith show. I mean, basically there aren't any because decided to avoid all that.
No, they're not there. There's no one there.
On the other hand, like, it is a real, like, Appalachian people are often kind of, you know, made fun of. And it's certainly not equivalent to the kind of oppressions that, like, people of color face.
Oh, no.
Like, it's still solidly, like, white privilege.
There's a lot of classist stuff going on with, like, if you're from the hills, you're...
Right, exactly. And there's still kind of, especially at that time, there was not any representation of, like, Southern Appalachian people. I mean, there was, like, I'm not sure when the Beverly Hillbillies
it's at this time.
That's so much cartoonier.
Yeah, it is very weird to compare and contrast the two of them. Because my dad also loved Beverly Hillbillies, like, so much. But they're so different.
Yeah.
And like, in terms of, like, Andy Griffith Show treats Andy and Barney, even Barney being a goofus, still has, like, a sincerity to him.
Yeah.
He seems like a person.
And I think part of that is that, you know, Andy Griffith was from North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Like, Mayberry was kind of based on the area that he was from.
Yeah.
Don Knotts is from West Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's a real authenticity to, like, the characters that they're playing and the dialect that they do and, you know, the kind of the way that they sort of come at that Appalachian culture.
Like, they probably know that it's called a pool and not a cement pond.
Right, exactly.
Which is what my dad always said. This week on Must Have Seen TV, we're talking about the Andy Griffith Show episode Fun Girls. It is the, oh my god, 27th episode of season 4. It was written by Aaron Rubin and directed by Kobe Ruskin. Here's how Netflix describes the episode: two gals interrupt Andy and Barney's late night work. Helen and Thelma see them and cancel their dates, so Barney and Andy take the other girls out. How accurate is that description?
It's technically accurate, but it leaves out a lot.
Yeah, it really does. Like, it's actually kind of hard to follow what the plot is by that description. In a way, there's a lot of generic girls in that one-line description.
Yeah, just calling them gals really sells the fun girls short.
Yeah, just some gals. Are they prostitutes? I'm just going to jump right to the deep end there.
Maybe. So this is actually their second appearance on the show.
Okay, because, yeah, they do reference a previous... They're the girls from Mount Pilot.
And there was a previous episode, which I watched recently because I was, you know, thinking about this. And it's all about Andy. This was when Andy was... Before he started dating Helen, his girlfriend in this episode. He had a previous girlfriend whose name I don't remember, who was not as much of a character.
Yeah.
Sarah? No.
But he had a girlfriend in, like, the season one. Because the season one Christmas episode she's in. She sings. It is lovely. But then, like, they wrote her out almost immediately.
Yeah. And during that time with his previous girlfriend, there was an episode where she had a male friend from college visiting, and Andy gets jealous, and he goes to Barney, and Barney's like, I'll set you up with some girls. And they're only in one scene. The Andy and Barney go to Mount Pilot, and they meet these same two girls at a diner. And they're, like, they're eating with them at the diner, and the girls are, like, doing their shtick that they do in this episode. And then a big kind of, like, palooka, like a big scary guy, comes over and was like, says to the girls, like, what are you doing out with these guys? You said you were busy tonight. And Andy ends up getting a black eye from him off screen. Like, he steps up like he's going to defend their honor, and then it cuts away and you see him with a black eye.
So this is very much like the writers loved those two actors so much. They're like, well, we have to bring them back.
Yeah, I think
immediately.
So.
Immediately. So the episode, of course, starts off with the opening credits, which are the opening credits. And do they ever change?
I think they might have reshot it when Opie got older and, like, the show turns to color.
Yeah.
I think they might have reshot it, but I don't think they ever changed anything. I think it was always them walking down the path to the fishing hole.
Yeah, and it's even, like, it just says, like, the same three names, like, Ronnie Howard, Andy Griffith, Don Knotts, And also, like, Don Knotts is only on the first five seasons, which is so weird to think about, how the show went three seasons past him.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like that's, like, Kramer or Phoebe leaving the show. Like, he's the main draw, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, you know, when they started the show, I don't remember if y'all talked about this before, but, you know, Andy Griffith, as a comedian, was known for doing this kind of hillbilly character that was very funny, and he actually chose to be the straight man on this show so that Don Knotts could carry the
The
humor.
So were they actually good friends? Did they still?
Yeah, they,
kind of like Will, kind of like what's his name, Alan Young and Bamboo Harvester, Mr. Ed. And we discovered that Alan Young just kept going to visit Bamboo Harvester up until the horse's death. Anyway, so the episode opens with them doing inventory, just really mundane work. I clocked on the back wall, there is a newspaper framed that says Deputy Fife, Hero in Cave Rescue, which is a callback to a previous episode I read on IMDb.
Yes. I think it was Andy and Helen that are trapped in the cave.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's a whole episode about the cave disaster.
Well, it's called, like, Barney and the Cave Rescue or something. It's, like, the name of the episode. It's, like, that's also basically the headline of this. That blows my mind that there was that kind of inter-series continuity that they would do that. Like, that's some Marvel Cinematic Universe, like, Green Giant saves the Battle of New York or whatever kind of, like, connectivity.
Yeah. Also so perfectly in character that Barney would want to put up the headline about how he's a hero, and Andy would let him.
Yeah. Oh, so sweet. So they're doing inventory. There's a really, like, so there's this whole riff up top about how, like, Barney knows how to sew and crochet. And he says,
"You say you mend those blankets?"
"Yeah. It's hard to keep up with him, but I stitch them up. Nights when time hangs heavy, I just take a needle and thread, so on."
What, like, the lines on this show sometimes.
Yeah.
That is deep.
Like, yeah.
That is a heavy line.
And I love that whole run is Barney, like, bragging about having these skills that are coded as feminine.
Yeah.
And Andy never makes fun of him for it. Like, you can see the show is sort of setting you up to laugh at him, but but Andy never laughs at him. Andy's just like, that's great.
Yeah, Andy asks him to make something.
Yeah.
Which, again, like, this is, like, the macro when you, like, look back at Andy Griffith on the whole, is like, I wish people would actually take the lessons that Andy Griffith is imparting into themselves. It's kind of like people who troll people and have Captain America avatars on Twitter, and it's like, I don't know if Captain America would actually be a misogynist aggressively.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like Andy Griffith himself was like a liberal, like, open-minded, free, comparatively open-minded, I would say, person, and I don't know if people always think of it that way.
Yeah, I think. I mean, and you know, we were just talking about how, like, every dad in the world watched this show.
Yeah.
You know, not a lot of those dads are not nearly as progressive as Andy Griffith was.
No, I think that a lot of dads watch it for the Gomer and Goober, totally unaware that Gomer, very gay!
Which is not subtle.
No! Oh, God! Jim Davis is super gay. You'll get to that in a second. So basically, like, they're like, we have to work tonight because we're taking the girls out to the dance tomorrow. So we want to get everything done tonight. But, like, Barney, he's worried about his blood sugar. Which is a very, like, again, 2018, 2019 concern. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was weird hearing someone talk about, like, I need to get my blood sugar up.
Yeah, it feels like, I don't think of that as being something that people even talked about when I was a little kid.
No.
Let alone, you know, 30 years before.
No. And so he's like, he's got to go to the diner and get a shake and, like, a hamburger with, like, literally every ingredient on it.
You know what I'm going to get? Two chili-sized burgers with chopped onions, ketchup, piccalilli, and mustard, side of french fries, a slab of rhubarb pie, and chocolate malt. How's that hit you?
That'll lay on your chest.
It sounded really
and
good.
And a slab of rhubarb pie.
A slab of, yeah, pie.
And it chocolate
was
malt.
Chocolate. It was, like, so much. So, like, as he's, is it, does he leave first? He leaves first, and then the women come?
He goes out the back, because that's where the car is, and the girls come in almost simultaneously.
He leaves by walking towards the camera.
I didn't even notice that.
It weirds, because, like, you know, every they're in a room on a multicam, well, on a shot multicam sitcom soundstage where the door is on the back of the far wall. But he exits the room by walking at the camera and, like, walking at presumably the door on the fourth wall that you don't see, which, like, weirdly, like, it weirded me out space-wise. I was like, what is the map of the Mayberry police departments? Like, what's the layout here? So he leaves, and then the two women show up. And now you said that the women are recurring characters at this point? Or did they become recurring?
Well, wait, which women?
The, you're talking about, was it Helen and Thelma
Helen
Lou?
Helen and Thelma Lou, yeah. They're recurring characters. Yeah. They were Andy and Barney's girlfriends for much of the series.
Oh, okay, okay. And is it ever explained, like, they're BFFs, dating BFFs?
That, I mean, I think it's just one of those, like, things of convenience.
Yeah, it's just
we
like,
only know them as the main character's girlfriends, so they hang out together because it's easier.
And they're the two women in the town.
Yeah, there's at least the two, like, available and of-age women.
Yeah, that's the other thing about older shows is, like, people are actually adults.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you watch this and you think, like, Andy Griffith is probably, this is definitely a fact I should know, he's probably in his 40s, he might be 50?
I think he's just in his, you're talking about on this episode?
Well, how old is Andy Griffith IRL at this time?
Probably, he's in his 30s, I think.
Really?
Yeah, because I looked it up.
Oh,
and
God,
it was,
that's
like,
a
younger
hard
than I
30s. But again, like, I guess you get age. If you're, like, just constantly smoking cigarettes and being around it all the time, I guess it's going to do... Is Don Knotts, like, 29? That would be...
I think they were both in their 30s at this time. Maybe late 30s.
Okay. Wow, they do look a lot older than that. But, well, you know, hey, it's hard living.
Everybody was older in the past.
Yeah. But it is kind of refreshing to see shows that star, like, these are adults. Like, there is, like, even Opie is, like, a child in this show, but he has nothing to do in this episode.
No.
He's not there to be cute. He doesn't have any lines. Does he even? No, he doesn't have any lines.
I don't think he has any lines.
No!
The other thing about Andy's girlfriend is that she's Opie's teacher.
Oh.
The episode where she's introduced, because her name is Helen Crump, and there's an episode where Opie keeps complaining about old Mrs. Crump.
Oh,
and Barney finally meets her, and she's gorgeous, and he's like immediately smitten with her.
That makes sense. Yeah. So then they basically are coming because they want to go see a Cary Grant movie that's playing. And like, Cary Grant movie is playing. Let's go see it right now. And like, no, we need to, like, get the work done tonight because we're going to take you guys out tomorrow night. So just, like, go have fun.
Yeah,
because
tomorrow night's the dance.
Tomorrow night is the dance, which also... While it's again like this wild artifact of like, I guess back in the 60s, they had town dances, like that was a thing. It's very weird.
Yeah, I wonder if, and this is just speculation because I don't know, but I find myself wondering if in real life, I know there were these kind of dances, but it seems like they would have. There would have been some organization behind them, whether it's like the Lions Club or like a church or like it wouldn't just be the town
sense.
Dance.
It seems like literally like it is just the town dance. Like the town has decided we're having a dance this night. Everyone just come on out. I was trying to think of like what the modern equivalent of this is. And it feels like it's like Facebook walls. Like, I don't know. When I go back to Tennessee to visit my parents who live in like Loudoun County, Tennessee. So like very rural. Everything's just going down on Facebook. It's like everyone's on their tablets, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
The baby boomers are the people that are really addicted to screens.
Yeah, no, it's totally true.
It's very true. But the screens are just bigger or have bigger font is the thing. So basically, like, he shoos them away. And then Gomer comes in to introduce Andy to Goober.
Right.
So this is Goober's debut episode.
Yeah, Gomer had previously referred to his cousin Goober, but he'd never shown up before.
So, because you told me beforehand that this is Goomer's, like, or this is Goomer, this is Gomer's, kind of like his senior year season before he's going to graduate.
The season finale of that season, season four of the Andy Griffith Show, is the pilot.
For Gomer Pyle USMC.
Yes.
And
which I also watched when I was a kid.
Ken Barry is not on that. Ken Barry's on Mayberry RFD.
That sounds right.
Because that is when Andy Griffith leaves the Andy Griffith Show, and they just like Ken Barry takes over, and it becomes a different show. They retitle it. Okay, who is in the Gomer Pyle cast? Is there anyone else noticing?
The guy who plays it's him, and the other main character is his drill sergeant, who's I don't remember his name, but he is known as a comedic actor, but he's mainly known as Gomer Pyle's drill sergeant.
Should watch that at some point. So, like, this is, like, a huge debut for Goober. Yeah. Like, they're basically saying, like, here, and I looked online, like, he's in 80-something episodes. Like, yeah. Like, they're basically like, here, you hope you like him. Here he is. And he does nothing but impressions.
Yeah.
Is that his main character game of just, like, doing weird impressions?
I think he becomes more of, he more fills the role of Gomer once Gomer is gone. But in this episode, he's just...
He's very dumb. Like, yeah. Or at least he's very, he's not forthcoming with any depth.
Yeah, no, not at all.
He's very protected. There's a wall up with Goober. You have to get to know him first. So yeah, Gomer, very gay. Jim Neighbor's very gay. Also, Jim Neighbor's very, like, that out as the 70s would let you be. Mm-hmm. Like, when he passed, I was reading, doing a lot of reading about him. Like, didn't he, like, take his partner at the time to sing the national anthem or something? Like, they referenced him, like, something. He was basically one of those, like, Charles Nelson Reilly, Paul Lynde gays of, like, everyone knows he's gay, but...
But that was the 70s.
It was the 70s.
This was the mid-60s.
Yeah.
I read... This honestly made me really sad when I read this, that something that happened with Jim Neighbors in the 60s is that he was buddies with Rock Hudson.
Oh.
They hung out in the same circles... And they never dated, but they were good friends. But then the tabloids got the idea that they were dating and started reporting that there were rumors that they were dating. And apparently, Jim Neighbors and Rock Hudson were like, well, we can't be friends anymore. We have to stop hanging out because they think we're in a relationship and that would be bad for both of us.
But also Rock Hudson's like, I don't, you know, this is down. No. Jim Neighbors is like, this is great. Rock Hudson is so hot. I watched that documentary Tab Hunter Confidential that was on Netflix that is about like, oh, there's a lot of that like mid-century closeted queer, just like sad. Like he was in a long-term relationship with oh gosh, Psycho, what's his name?
Anthony Perkins.
Yeah. And ugh, yeah, it's really sad. There's this really great episode of Match Game. This is totally a tangent, but also most of my tangents begin with this is a really good episode of Match Game,
right?
So they apparently shot Match Game in the same lot as the Carol Burnett Show, and they were just doing Match Game, and then all of a sudden Carol Burnett, Tim Conway, Vicki Lawrence, and Jim Neighbors just burst on, like, just walk onto the set, being like, you guys are being too loud. Turn it down. And everyone's like, freaks out. They start getting into, like, a fake screaming match with, like, Richard Dawson and Brett Summers and Charles Nassarelli. And then, like, Gene Rayburn just, like, grabs them, sits them down, hands them cards. He's like, you're going to play the next round. Jim Neighbors is wearing, like, this insane green leisure suit. And it's, like, just very extra. And it's just... Ugh, it's a great TV moment.
I think of Jim Neighbors, and I feel like you will certainly have a perspective on this, also being from Tennessee. I think of Jim Neighbors as sort of the quintessential, like, classic Southern gay man.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that he's an amazing singer.
Yep. Like, gospel singer, usually, right?
Yeah.
Does some gospel singing? Yeah. Yeah. It's him and Leslie Jordan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was really sad when he passed away, specifically for that fact of, like, you know, it's history erases gay people, queer people from history because we aren't allowed to talk about it. And so, therefore, history doesn't record it. And so, like, when they pass, it's always this, like, I don't know, like, you're grasping at air in a way. Like, no, please, don't let this dissipate. Like, please talk about how Jim Neighbors was gay. And then we get a whole lot of, like, Judy, Judy, Judy. A lot of, they're basically like, here's Goober, get ready, you're gonna love him, or the show is not gonna be for you anymore in a little while.
Wait a minute, Andy. Close your eyes.
What?
Close your eyes. Listen to this. He's gonna take off on Cary Grant. Go, Goob. Judy, 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 Judy. Couldn't you just swear Cary Grant was right here in this room?
Then they leave. And then, like, the night is almost over. Or, like, no, a bunch of time passes. And Andy's like, where the F are my fries? Like, where's my hamburger? And then Barney finally comes back. And he's late because he ran into some old
He also
friends.
Doesn't have food.
He doesn't have food either. And he ran into some friends who are... The Fun Girls.
Daphne and Skippy.
Daphne and Skippy. Basically, where's their show? like, why wasn't this also a backdoor pilot for whatever? Like, Laverne and Shirley's got nothing on Daphne and Skippy.
I feel like what we find out about their lives in this episode of The Andy Griffith Show is as much about their lives as we would be allowed to learn in 1964 on network television.
They both look like Jan Hooks joined the B-52s.
Yes.
Like they both have, and I think like I get why you like that, because like they also evoke this very deep cut X-Men shit, 80s boom boom.
Oh yeah.
Like it's that same like brassy polka dots, like swinging awesome, like probably definitely from the wrong side of the tracks, kind of like
like they're
feminine energy.
Like Boom Boom, they're obviously women who do not have money or come from money, but have style and have like dedicated themselves to their idea of what a stylish modern lady should be.
So which one is, so one of them basically talks like she has a frog in her throat.
That's Daphne.
Yeah.
Skippy is all about like her face acting is amazing. Yes. And Daphne's voice is amazing.
And this was your blind date, Daphne. You remember Daphne.
Hello, doll.
And they both like, it is such a dynamic. They're also treated like a natural disaster is coming.
Yes.
Like the way that Andy reacts, like, oh my god, there, throughout the entire episode, he's just like, we have like whatever we have to do, we have to deal with these people right now. This is too much. Like, it's so, I don't know, kind of refreshing seeing two energetic women being treated as an actual like viable threat, like like a viable like safety concern. Like they're coming on so strong. It's really great. They start like trying to make out with them immediately. Like the one of them, which one grabs Andy?
That's Daphne.
Okay, Daphne like grabs Andy. Like they're in the cell. It's like Barney turns around and Andy's already.
Yeah, Daphne has already locked them in the cell, and then Barney's trying to get to him with the key, and Skippy keeps pulling him away.
It's a good bit of physical comedy. He finally gets like the keys to like the come out. It's a very intense scene, and so yeah, they. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're just girls that like to have fun.
I mean, the word that I always want to use for them that I would never use in another context, certainly not a modern context, but the first word that comes to mind for Daphne and Skippy is floozies.
Yeah, they're floozies, definitely.
Like they may actually be meant to kind of be implied sex workers. I think that's a possible reading.
Yeah.
But they're certainly women who go out and have a good time with men and are open to whatever happens and probably are expecting, you know, especially because of the gender standards of the time, even if they're not sex workers, they're expecting to be taken care of in return for, you know, being affectionate and like being someone you can go have a good time with.
Yeah. So basically, like, the whole plan is, like, let's just get them back. Let's get them home ASAP. Forget working. We just need to get them out of here. And so, Andy, they put on their jackets. They, like, usher them to the car. But while they're out getting them into the car, that is when Thelma Lou and Helen come out from the Gary Grant motion picture. Because there was a glaring typo on that poster. Again, I think that I clocked because of IMDb. And then was like, I was expecting it to be very tiny in the background. But it is, like, center frame, huge, like, Gary Grant between their heads. And part of me wonders, like, did Cary Grant's estate be like, can't use my name? Like, you can say
it. You know, I was curious about, like, if they were seeing a Cary Grant movie at this time, what movie would it be? It would have to be Charade.
Okay.
Because Cary Grant was late in his career at this point. He 64. Was not making, he was making, like, one movie a year.
Yeah.
And Charade came out in late 63. There wasn't another one until Father Goose, which was the very end of 64. But first of all, if it was Charade, like, nobody ever says, you know, an Audrey Hepburn movie.
Yeah.
And she was, like, super famous at the time.
That's always weird. Like, when people on sitcoms go to a bar, they always order a beer.
Yeah.
And whenever they're going to go see a movie, they're always going to see the new actor's name movie, which is always really funny. It's funny to me. Also, I wanted to know what time of day any of this was supposed to be, because it's supposed to be like Andy very clearly said we're working late at night. We're working after hours.
Before, when they talk about how Barney's hungry and concerned about his blood sugar, he asks Andy what time it is, and Andy says it's almost 7. So I think the girls were going to a like 7 o'clock, 7:15 movie.
Yeah.
And when Barney and Andy leave with the fun girls and the other girls are leaving the movie, it's got to be around 9.
And in East Tennessee, it is sometimes still light at 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Which, especially in April, like we're in the summer, spring, summer months, it does stay late that late. Which I remember being a kid and like loving that. the summers in Loudoun. So basically, like the two, like they see Andy and Barney with these two floozies.
Yeah, and the fun girls are talking loudly like they're on a date because that's the way they talk all the time.
Yeah, and also as far as they know, this is how all dates go.
Yeah.
They meet up with the men, try to make out with them, and they're shoved in cars. And that's how all their relationships go. So basically they see like, oh, they couldn't go out with us because they were going out with these two, and they are not happy. Misunderstanding. So then we cut to the next day, and Andy Griffith or Andy Taylor calls them wild women in a way, like his accent is so good there.
Yeah.
All I know is the work that was supposed to be done last night has got to be finished today. All because you brought a couple of wild women in there for a visit.
It always makes me think of that song, which the version I always think of is from The Muppet Show when, Peter Sellers on The Muppet Show. He does a song in a southern accent called Cigarettes and Whiskey and Wild, Wild Women.
I noted that the outdoor set on The Andy Griffith Show is so good. Like, it's just, it did the, well, so this is like season 4 of Andy Griffith, so like, it's a hit, they've got the money, Desi Lu is like, cool, yeah, we'll turn our entire lot into, I guess, a back lot for... For the Andy Griffith Show, because it's like a whole town square that cars can drive through.
Yeah.
It's very big. We get an Aunt B scene, which I did not have in Loaded Goat.
Oh, yeah, she's not in that one at all.
So, what is your take on Aunt B?
Well, she's barely in this one.
She's barely, so I'm like, yeah, this is the only chance I'm going to talk about.
I love when she says, oh, fiddlety sticks.
Yeah, fiddlety sticks. I mean, what is her game? She's just trying to get Andy to put on a tie. This is like, the girls are not going to go... to the dance because they saw them and they're like, no, we're not going.
Yeah. If you want to go to the dance, you take those fun girls.
Well, yeah, titular line goes to, is it Helen or Thelma Lou gets the titular line?
I think it's Thelma Lou who says that.
Shouldn't be hard for you to get yourselves another date. Why don't you take the two young ladies who were with you last night when you were working? They look like fun girls.
Yeah, and... yeah, so they say they have other dates. So we find out when we get to the dance who their other dates are.
Yeah, it's like, of course, it's like, well, there's only been like 6 people in this episode. Of course, it's Gober and Goober. So basically, Ambie's like, no, you're going to go to the date. She's trying to get him to like put on a tie. And then Barney finally shows up and he's like, no, we're going to go. And Andy's like, I don't want to go and just stand in like the stag line with old
Ben Schwump.
Is that an actual character?
We see him at the dance, but I don't think he's a recurring character. Okay, I think he's just a joke for this.
Because I did like that at the end when they, Barney says, I want to go back and see if Otis has like locked himself in for the night. And I was like, oh, that's a really cool like world building thing of like they're referencing Otis, who you don't see in this episode at all. But he's referenced, which is really interesting. And then Barney's like, no, we got dates. And he snaps and they come running.
I want to talk about the clothes that the men wear to the dance.
Yeah, please.
I don't know if this was your thought, but looking at what everyone else is wearing, Andy Taylor is the most stylish man in Mayberry.
Yeah.
Like, that tie is as narrow as a tie has ever been.
Mm-hmm.
His lapels are narrow, too. It's like the, like... I feel like it's the really good 1964 suit.
Yeah, when everyone else is wearing that, there's like that really standard Southern suit. It's like kind of oversized. The pants are up real high.
Yeah,
it's like the pork pie hat kind of deal. Like what Barney's wearing, essentially.
Yeah, of course, Barney has a bow tie, which is a very Don Knotts choice. And then when we see Goober and Gomer at the dance, they have like very like 1940s looking suits.
Yeah.
That they probably, you know, because they're like hillbillies, they probably are wearing like their dad's suits. And they have like super wide ties. And
yeah.
Like...
and Andy's very like, it's a Don Draper moment, kind of. when they like run in and, Snappy? No, what's her name?
Skippy.
Skippy's the one with the face.
Yeah.
Face and voice. Face is the one that has, isn't it? It has a really great line of like, they meet Opie. Like,
oh, he's adorable.
Hello, sweetheart. You gonna be a sheriff when you grow up, too?
Oh, no, Daff. You know how that works. The son of a cop is usually a gangster.
Which is such a great line.
The horror on Aunt B's face when she sees the fun girls. And then when they start interacting with Opie, and she literally takes Opie like by his collar and pulls him out of the room.
I love that. Is a really, really good line. And also indicates the kind of circles the fun girls run in, that they know that, like, nah, cops' kids usually turn out to be gangsters.
Earlier when they're in the jail, one of them says, "I've never been to jail except to visit friends."
Yeah. That is weird. Barney's like, well, they wanted to see a jail cell. So it's like weird. So then we get to the dance. Do we kind of gloss over Barney really twisting Andy's arm to like make this happen? Like, I guess it's kind of like the plot's got to make it happen.
Yeah. There's sort of a thing about like manners, I feel like, because the whole thing with the fun girls is that they don't have conventional manners.
Right.
And part of that is that they're really pushy. But, like, Andy and Barney have really good manners, so when the girls are pushy, they can't...
They can never
be like, no, we're not doing that, go home.
Yeah, well, even, like, in the dance scene, instead of actually being like, no, cool, bye, they have to, like, go and concoct this elaborate thing of, like, hey, can you just do a thing where you, like, when you stop playing the music, we'll switch partners? So we get to the dance, and that's when we find out who Helen and Thelma cats are playing, or they're with... And they're with Goober and Gomer, and I wrote that they are slumming it. Like, I don't know. Is Gomer a catch?
Not for a lady.
No. No. I wrote down, like, they, in this episode, again, like, well, also, this is the only episode they appear in together, is another trivia fact. I'm just spoiling the trivia section. So I wrote down, they have a very Larry, Daryl, and Daryl vibe.
They totally do.
Like, and it's mainly because Gomer is the one that's doing all the talking. And he's not like erudite or anything. Because like Larry actually is a very like eloquent speaker at times with his like really thick southern accent. But like Gomer is the one who like can read social cues sort of and talk and is kind of like the mediator for Goober, who is a goober.
Goober only does bits. He doesn't have conversations. He just does bits.
He has no lines. And even when they're talking...
Except for yo.
Like, that's how this scene starts. It's like, that's how he says yes, yo. And basically, Gomer's trying to get Goober to do all the same bits again. And the girls are like, not have it. They're like, oh, God. No, thank you. I wrote down this one. This is like the most dad show ever. Like, just watching it, it's just so like, it's so very dad, like baby boomer dads, which made me wonder, what is the show for like 30 something dads? Like, what is the Andy Griffith for dads that are like dads right now? Is it like Two and a Half Men?
I want to say sports?
Is it wrestling?
I want to say, I mean, as far as, like, sitcoms anyway, I was going to say The Office.
Oh, yep, like, it is, yeah.
Like, most, yeah. I mean, most people
rewatch
and rewatch The Office now, and I feel like especially, like, straight men that I know, like, the number one sitcom that they'll, like, go to and rewatch is The Office.
That is, how often do you rewatch The Office?
I've rewatched it all the way through maybe I probably only watched it all the way to the last episode of the last season, like, once.
I've rewatched
big chunks of it, like, I don't know, two or three times in the past, like, few years.
It's not, because, like, that is, all my Tennessee friends, that is their go-to. But, like, in this house, in my house, we rewatch 30 Rock, Parks and Rec, It's Always Sunny. Like, those are the ones that we rewatch or just have on. Mm-hmm. Or, like, Friends in Seinfeld. Like, my husband is usually one that gets in the kicks of rewatching things. Right now, we are rewatching Veep. Like, The Office, even though I love The Office, is not one that we return to.
Well, I have a really strong... Can I share with you briefly my theory about The Office?
Yo, please.
Because I feel very strongly about it. And because this...
I'll never get a chance to talk about it.
I was going
to
say, since this podcast is specific to the 20th century, you'll never have an episode. But the thing about The Office is a really great show, and it ends... The arc, not that there aren't good episodes after it, because there are, especially for the next couple seasons, but the arc of The Office ends at the end of season 3. Mm-hmm. The story that the show is telling is over when Michael doesn't get the promotion and Jim comes in during Pam's interview and asks her on a date.
Yeah.
That's the end of the show.
Yeah.
Everything after that is just extra. It's like Andy Griffith's show after Barney leaves.
Or, I mean, like, because that's honestly, like, the arc of the British version. Like, because the last episode, until you get... No, it's even... That's even the same with the holiday specials of the UK version. Like, you never see Tim and Dawn get together and be together. Like, the holiday specials when she opens up the gift and he got her, like, paint, like markers or something. Like, he got her an art gift.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
But, like, that is the season three finale. And so there's still great episodes after that, but they had to start lining new things.
Yeah, those first three seasons, the show's really about something, because every main character wants something they cannot have. Jim wants Pam. Pam wants to be with someone who loves her and cares about her.
Yeah.
And, like, Michael wants to be a part of human society, and Dwight wants to be respected.
Yeah.
And, like, after that, it just becomes about whatever. Because even, like, Michael and Dwight, after that, like, Michael starts having relationships and, like, becomes a more grounded person, and Dwight starts becoming human, too.
Yeah, it's... I do think that The Office definitely has that same Andy Griffith Show vibe for people that are in their 30s. Also because, like, that more accurately mirrors what life is right now.
Mm-hmm.
My office moved to the sales floor, so now I, like, sit on a very, like, before we were in editorial, so it was, like, a whole bunch of editorial people, and editorial people are, and I'm one, so I'm speaking of myself, insane, like, dress crazy, loud, always stressed, and now we're on the sales finance HR floor, and it's like, those people are 9 to 5, casual Friday, like, you know, right, that kind of vibe. Yeah. And it's very different. And I think that The Office really taps into that. I'm glad that we sussed that out, because that was a question I had on my thing. So this is when Andy is like, well, I can't obviously say no to these women. I have to concoct an elaborate ruse. He goes up to the band leader and whispers in his ear, and then the band leader's like, so whenever we stop playing the music, everyone find new partners. And then we just get a nice kind of like do-si-do, like dance, physical comedy bit of all of them switching partners. And you get really good face acting from both Andy and Don Knotts.
Yeah.
When they're paired with women they're uncomfortable with.
There's a couple of really great female extras in this scene too. Because in between like escaping the fun girls and getting back to their girlfriends, Andy dances with, like, the tiniest adult woman in the world, and Barney dances with this, like, really tall auntie.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really good scene, and they do a really good job with really filling out the vibe. Again, like, when you think, like, this was filmed in Los Angeles, it still feels very North Carolina.
Yeah.
With the set decoration, and it also feels very much like the North Carolina I grew up in the 80s, and, like, or the Tennessee I grew up in the 80s and 90s. Like, I see, like, old cars like that, and it's just like, yeah, those were just around.
Yeah.
Like, when I would go back to, like, Red Boylan Springs, Kentucky, like, where my mom grew up, or even, like, Loudoun, it's like, yeah, those, like, Mayberry is not that far removed from certain parts.
Oh, not at all.
At all.
And the fun girls comment on it, too, when they come into the dance. It's a real square dance.
Yeah.
And one of them says it's like what they'd have at one of those friendship clubs, which I don't have any ideas. But
what is a friendship club? So I mean, like, is Mount Pilots? Is that where they're from? Is that like a city? Like, what is?
It's supposed to be bigger than Mayberry. It's also fictional.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's,
okay,
the idea is that it's like, I don't think, because they talk about, I think it's Raleigh. I think it's the closest real big city.
So that's where Andy's from. Right? I think Andy Griffith's really from.
He's there. From the area, but he's from a town called Mount Airy, which is a little town. But yeah, Mount Pilot is supposed to be bigger than Mayberry, but it's not like a city. It's still
So they're big city girls by comparison.
Yeah, like Mount Pilot, as we saw in their first appearance, Mount Pilot has a 24-hour diner. Mayberry probably does not have a 24-hour diner.
No. Or it's probably operating the honor system, like, okay, guys, y'all just lock up when you leave. Because that's how Mayberry is. So it kind of works, like, by when they're doing their, like, partner swapping, they get partnered with their girlfriends and can, like, apologize. Andy, like, actually, like, pulls his Helen pulls her away and actually explains. And it's very, very nice that they actually, there's no misunderstanding after they just, like, talk.
Yeah.
It doesn't continue. It doesn't become like a we were on a break kind of thing. So it's very nice. Then is it when they go back?
Well, I wanted to mention that Barney doesn't just apologize. He tells Thelma Louise for what really seems like the first time.
Yeah. Is it the first time?
I mean, I haven't rewatched enough of the show to be sure, but that's the reaction.
Yeah. Because he's like saying it. She's like,
you know, you're the only girl I care anything about. I mean, you're the only one I really, well, love.
What?
I said you're the only girl I love.
I can't hear you.
You're the only girl I love.
The end of the episode is them going back. Is it them? Oh, no, it's... Is it? No, it's the same night. Like,
yeah, because they drop... They drop their girlfriends off. Yeah, and then they...
Because the fun girls are now with Goober and Gomer. Ladies yeah. love cool Gomer.
Right, like, because all the fun girls want to do is, like, laugh at anything a man does.
Yeah.
And that, and like, all Gomer wants to do is for like, people to laugh at Goober.
Yeah.
And all Goober wants is to be laughed at. So it works out great.
Perfect. It is perfect. So they're just, like, driving by because Barney's like, I want to see if Otis, like, locked himself in for the night. They go, like, oh, did you leave the lights on? It's like, oh, yeah, I left them on for Otis. They go in. And I wrote, like, there's, you hear a surprise yelled. And I wrote, like, this is hell. Like, if I walked into a place and I saw Goober, Gomer, and those two women, and I was Andy Taylor, I'd be like, this is a personal hell. Like, get me out of this. They're both in there because they wanted to, like, party still. They wanted to keep it going, right? Or, like...
Well, that's sort of the implication, yeah. But Gomer says, we brought your girls back for
yeah.
you.
Yeah, and so there's like, no, gotta drive them back. And that is like, that's it. That is a tiny, that's a tonal difference from Loaded Goat. I guess like you could say Andy Griffith, you know, runs the gamut.
Yeah, for sure.
Of kinds of episodes. And it's also interesting to note the structure of this. Again, like... Before they invented the ABC plot structure that, like, Cheers really perfected, like, we have that sewing thing up top. That doesn't come back.
Mm.
Like, there's no other references to it. It's more like just giving them business. And I guess, like, the Gober and Goomer, whatever.
The Pyle Cousins.
Yeah, the Pyle Cousins, like, their whole bit was really, you know, they needed that extra pair in there to, like, do the swapping out later during the dance. So yeah. That made sense. But all of his Cary Grant impression stuff was like, we got time to kill. Like, and also, you're now basically a series regular, so. I mean, is Goober in the rest of season 4?
There's only a few more episodes, and this is his only appearance in season 4, and then he starts at the beginning of season 5.
And then, so I guess when Don Knotts leaves, they really start leaning on Goober.
Yeah.
Because who else? I mean,
and Goober doesn't have his hat yet in this episode.
That was also interesting.
Because he wears the same hat as
the Jughead hat.
Yeah.
He was wearing just he wasn't wearing a hat, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it was very interesting. Also, so young. I'm used to seeing photos of all of them when they're older. I guess because I mostly recognize Goober from color promo photos, and he looks so much older in those. I was like, he looks so young. In this, and it's only like 3 years earlier. So again, hard living. Are you ready for some must-have facts?
Yes.
Okay.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
So the ratings for this, very hard to find out, but an estimated 29.4 million people watched this. The season.
Okay.
That's the season ranking, which is, again, a lot. But for the 63-64 TV season, the Andy Griffith Show was ranked 5th. The top 5 shows of that season were number 5, Andy Griffith Show, 4, Petticoat Junction, 3, The Dick Van Dyke Show, 2, Bonanza, and number 1, The Beverly Hillbillies.
It's interesting that we were talking about earlier about how this is such a more down, down to earth depiction of hillbillies. And it's interesting that the cartoonish hillbillies are beating them on two shows.
Yeah, it's like Petticoat Junction and Beverly Hillbillies are like one and two. I'm sure Green Acres is like coming up. No, Green Acres was never big in the ratings. But I wonder. Part of me is like, is that because Yankees luck? It's like Southern people related to Andy Griffith like more, but then like Yankees probably liked making fun of us more. Also, I grew up where Yankee was a literal derogatory term.
Like, yeah, it pretty much was what I grew up too.
And I feel like actual people from the North think it's funny. And I'm like, no, where I'm from, like if we were my parents were cut off by someone with like a New York license plate, it would be like, oh, those Yankees. Like, it was really like they were serious. Oh gosh. So the CBS Monday night lineup was a fucking epic lineup. So started with an hour of game shows, To Tell the Truth and I've Got a Secret, and then an hour and a half of comedies, The Lucy Show, The Danny Thomas Show, The Andy Griffith Show, and then a drama that only lasted one season, East Side, West Side. So that's like, that's an interesting lineup, I guess. I mean, Andy Griffith is the only Southern show on CBS that night, I guess, because Beverly Hillbillies was also a CBS show. I think CBS had all of the Southern shows.
Interesting.
I think they did, because CBS canceled all of them when All in the Family and Mary Tyler Moore hit. I think. I feel like, yeah. I've written an article about this, so I should know. It's the only episode with Goober and Gomer in it. Goober debuts. He was mentioned in 1962 episode, and I talked about how that newspaper on the back wall was a callback to episode 413, so 14 episodes earlier. On IMDb, 202 users rated this an 8.7 out of 10. Would you go high or lower, or is that right on the money?
I mean, that's pretty good. It's not flawless, but it's a very good episode of 1960s television.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd say like a solid 8 is really like, it's a definite good episode of the show. It is very much a 1960s episode of television, where it's kind of like, you got 25 minutes, you know, just
Well, you know,
hang out.
Something that I thought when I watched this episode is that it's, structurally, it's very much like a sex farce, except it's 1964, so nobody can even imply sex.
No, not at all. Not at all. Or even, like, really, like, no kissing. Yeah. It's, again, like, Andy and Barney's relationship with Helen and Thelma is very, like, Archie Jughead. Like, it's very,
right, like,
we're gonna go to the dance, we're gonna go to the movies. Like, these are 30-year-old people.
Right, and that's the thing is, like, I have to believe. I don't know, like, obviously these characters are, like, way older than, like, my parents or your parents. So I don't know people who were in that, like, time and place. But I have to believe that Andy and Helen would have been sleeping together in real life in 1964, right? Like, they're grown adults with jobs. He's a widower. Like, they would be having what we understand as an adult relationship.
Yeah.
But because it's on TV, like, the good girls are chased, and they take them home and wave goodnight to them.
Yep. And also, I could also imagine maybe, like, socially they couldn't talk about it, but everyone assumed, well, obviously they're fucking, but, like, they're not going to talk about it because, you know, Jesus. who had the must-see performance?
Another thing that never gets talked about on the Andy Griffith show.
Yeah, which is very... Did they go to church on it?
I don't remember that ever happening. Like, it might have... There might have been episodes
of the church. Yeah, because I feel like Barney could get up to some antics in a church. Who had the must-see performance in this episode?
I mean, there's so many good performances. I feel like it's almost always Don Knotts.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, and I haven't mentioned this yet on this episode, but I'm biased because I share an alma mater with Don Knotts.
Oh.
We both graduated from the theater department of West Virginia University.
Oh, nice. Are they very into that?
Apparently, when I was there, there was a Don Knotts Boulevard in town, but there was not a statue. Apparently now there's a Don Knotts statue.
Why wouldn't that be up there in 1970? Like, even before Three's Company happens, it's like, get that up. It's Don Knotts. Like, that is, I don't have anyone close to that level of famous from Middle Tennessee State University. Al Gore has something to do with my college, but I don't think he actually went there because it's not a prestigious school. I would probably give it to the Fun Girls. I'll break my rules and give it to both of them because in my head, they're
both really good.
They're also like, they're fulfilling the same role. They're very
good. The face
good.
And the voice.
Yeah, face and the voice. Must other people see this episode?
I'm going to say yes. I mean, you have to sort of come at it with an understanding of what TV was like in 1964, but it's such good comedy. Like, it's very sharp.
Yeah, and it's just really, it's really nice to see physical performances that, I don't know, there's a joy you get when you watch a good Looney Tune, or even like, okay, mm-hmm. for newer audiences, when you can watch one of those like Pixar shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there's something really pure about like visual storytelling that you get lost in a lot of like writerly shows, and like TV nowadays is very writery, which is like, I'm a writer, I'm bored. But there's something very, very satisfying about just watching a master like Don Knotts. And also Andy Griffith has some really good facial expressions.
Oh, yes.
It's really great watching them work, and then also seeing unsung, I'm assuming lost to history, women like those Fun Girls whose names I don't know. So I'm not helping them in terms of being lost to history. Let's pull from the great TV sitcom book, which I never remember to get out before we start. This is a textbook size green book that has capsule entries for shows ranging from hits to one-season wonders from 1949 to 1983. Pick a year, and we'll read about one.
Well, I was thinking, I didn't know what years it was. I'd forgotten what years it was going to be, and I wanted to do something that was around when I was a little kid. So let's go 1983.
83. Yeah. Do you want to hear about It Takes Two, Mama's Family, The New Odd Couple, or Newhart?
Well, I mean, I already know about Mama's Family and Newhart.
Yeah, like, this ends right here, so as far as this book is concerned, these are like, who knows?
I'm a little curious about The New Odd Couple. It sounds like they've done it since then, and it hasn't been a good idea then.
Oh, yeah, get ready. So, a reminder, as always, that Rick Mitz has a feisty personality, and this was written in the early 80s. Shortly after ABC announced they were remaking the sitcom The Odd Couple with a black Oscar and Felix, the playwright Neil Simon announced he was reviving the stage version of The Odd Couple with a female duo. What can we expect next? An all-gay, Hispanic, quadriplegic, diabetic, one of the above, all of the above cast? Ugh. At any rate, this Odd Couple was just like the 1970-71 season Odd Couple, except in blackface. It was played by actual black people, though. So
okay, you worried me for a minute. Yeah. Like, 1983? No!
That's Rick Mitz saying, except in blackface. In fact, some of the scripts and stories were the same. The changes, Felix Ron Glass, formerly of Barney Miller, future of Firefly, is less persnickety and does more fashion photography, and fewer bar mitzvahs and weddings. Oscar DeMond Wilson, formerly son in Sanford and Son, is the same. A sports writer and a slob. And the year is now 1982, not 1970. So, it did not last. Also, the aggressive dismissiveness of doing a new Odd Couple and making it not two white guys. Very interesting. But it's a good cast.
Yeah, those guys are both good actors. It's weird that I only know one of them from later and one of them from earlier. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to picture them together.
Yeah, that is. It's like I'm basically picturing another Sanford and Son in a way. It's like I think Ron Glass was... Oh, what was his name? Shepard? Yeah. On Firefly? Or Book.
Shepard Book.
Shepard Book. We got both of them eventually.
I've not watched Firefly in a long time because I'm not one of those people.
No, I'm not. It is my least favorite Joss... Well, Dollhouse is my least favorite Joss Whedon thing.
But that barely even counts.
Yeah, I guess in that case, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is my least favorite Joss Whedon thing. He wrote an episode. I don't know, like, I think The Odd Couple is such a solid premise for a show, which is obviously why they just did a reboot of it with Thomas Lennon and Matthew Perry that went, like, 4 or 5 seasons. Like, it's off now, but it went for... I mean, I think
it's amazing how there's so much TV on now that there can be things you just don't, just not on your radar at all.
No, I mean, oh god, I mean, okay, at work I discovered that the zombie show Z Nation was on for 5 years, 4 or 5 years on Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
And I had no idea the show was a thing, and now I just learned that it went for like 60 episodes.
Yeah, like I do, we didn't mention this at the top, but I do a column for Sci-Fi Wire where fantasy cast movies, so I'm always looking up actors, and a lot of times I'm like, what's their most recent thing? Because I know them from something 10 years ago, but I have to put something in parentheses after their name.
Yeah.
And there was something, I forget now what actor it was, but he had been on a cable drama about the building of the railroads in the U.S.,
like wait, a historical was that like one drama? Of those like WGN originals? Like, because there's a lot of
like
those.
I'm like how are these shows just going on all the time?
Well, and a lot of them, like, so there's a lot of like Canadian originals that like Christopher Lloyd is a regular on some like Canadian show, and I was like, oh, he's been doing that. Like, what?
I thought he was just really old and barely worked anymore.
No, he is apparently still around. It's so weird. So I mean, like, okay, if you were going to do a new Odd Couple, who would you cast? What would you want to see on a new Odd Couple for 2019?
Well, I mean, my first thought is that I think you do want to do the gay Odd Couple now.
Yeah, or,
right?
I mean, do you want to go full gay, diabetic, quadriplegic as Rick Mitz?
I think we'll start with just gay. Although, wait. I was going to say gay, but they're not a couple. They're still the Odd Couple. They're just roommates. So what if it's a gay man and a lesbian?
Oh, okay.
Who are the Odd Couple. And I think I want the gay man to be the sloppy one just to avoid stereotyping.
Yeah. But also, like, again, there's the thing of just getting more variety on television. Because we're at the point where there's still, like, there's a lot more queer representation on TV than there was a year ago, 5 years ago. It's getting incrementally better, but it's still, like, not a lot. And so you're still, like, you don't want two of the exact same.
I think, just off the top of my head, I think Cameron Esposito could be really good as the meticulous, like fastidious character.
Oh, that'd be really good.
And then I'm not sure about the guy.
I don't know. I always want to cast Dave Holmes in things, even though I don't know if he really acts anymore. But I just, when I did I recast Mary Tyler Moore show in my head.
Mm-hmm.
It was published on Tumblr, and then I pitched it at work, and they were like, no, there's no audience for this. But like
I have the only audience for that.
Yeah.
I've collected them. Yep. And they're all mine.
Well, you usually do a lot of like big franchise.
I do a lot of comic books. Sometimes I do things just to make nerds mad, like when I recast Back to the Future entirely with queer women.
Yeah. See, that's fun. I wanted to do that with sitcoms. Like, I was recasting Mary Tyler Moore, and it's like Ellie Kemper is the new Mary Tyler Moore, Alana Glazer is the new Rhoda, Claudia O'Doherty is the new Georgette. I put John Cho as the new Ted. Nick Offerman is, of course, the new Lou Grant. Dave Holmes would be the new Murray. What's her name? Catherine Hahn as the new Phyllis Lindstrom.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll probably get a new Odd Couple. It's such a good format that you can just, like, mix anyone into it, and it'll work.
I mean, it's such a, like, the, you know, sloppy person and the neat person is mixed into everything. I mean, like Danny Tanner and Joey's, you know, they're a couple. There's just a million other things on that show.
Monica and Rachel.
Yeah.
Even. Like Monica and Joey, Monica and Phoebe, Monica and, like, it's a lot.
Monica is just a freelance Felix.
Yeah. A lot of Monica plots in the last half of Friends. I love the original Odd Couple, and at some point I'm actually going to do one on this show, I swear. Because I love the original Odd Couple. Thank you so much for coming by and making me do a not insane episode of The Andy Griffith Show.
I was happy to correct that.
Doesn't issue. Involve goats with bad digestive problems. Where can people find you on the internet if they want to talk about The Andy Griffith Show?
You can find me on Twitter at AnotherL. You can also find me on Instagram at AnotherL, but that's mostly pictures of my cat. But some people like those.
Yeah, exactly. And
And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest, L. Collins, for dropping by and talking about the Andy Griffith Show with me. Next time, I'll be discussing the Dharma and Greg episode, Invasion of the Buddy Snatcher. Invasion of the Buddy Snatcher is in season 1 of Dharma and Greg, and it is episode 23 of season 1. You can stream Dharma and Greg on Hulu. Until then, I want to hear from all of you. Please tweet questions, comments, anything about sitcoms to at Must Have Seen TV on Twitter. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram and Facebook and Tumblr at Must Have Seen TV. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. Read the words that I write at Decider.com. The theme song is Apollo Throwdown by The Go Team. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to everyone for listening. And I'll see you next time on Must Have Seen TV.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.